cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined every week by my good buddy, John Mariano. John, you were retired not that long ago, and now you find yourself on two podcasts.
Corey, you are an addiction. I just can't quit.
Well, I'm glad you said that, John. What happened was, you were having so much gosh darn fun in the Aerosmith show. We were kicking around new ideas, and the idea came up, you know, we love movies. And we love music in movies, and so many great iconic movie moments wouldn't happen without music. And we heard a great one in the intro, a little Don't You Forget About Me from The Breakfast Club, which is, I don't know if you can tell from our logo, but John and I are children of the 80s. And that came from an absolute 80s movie classic. John, maybe tell us a little bit about music in movies and what it means to you.
Well, the concept of this show, and like Corey and I have been banging around a few ideas for shows, and you know, just as a tease, there might be one or two more dropping eventually, but this is the first of, or the second of this brand of Backtracks. And you know, whether it's a scene in a movie or a TV show, or it's the theme song, part of the soundtrack, it's what kind of informs what's going on. And you know, Corey and I, to kick it off, have picked two songs, one for this episode, one for the next episode, but we pre-discussed, like, this is what we feel this show is. And you know, these happen to be from movies, but we could pull stuff from TV shows. It doesn't need to be a theme song. It doesn't need to be specifically on the soundtrack. It could just be something iconic from a scene. Some examples, off the top of my head, pick any Queen song from Highlander, and we could easily rock that out on an episode or two. I've often thought about, there are several TV shows from the 80s which are iconic in my life, and doing the opening songs to them. And you know, we could probably knock out three or four of them in a single episode because they're so short. Mm-hmm. Corey, I know you have a few. Corey, what specifically about, you know, film, movies, television, and music hits you the right way?
You can't have the medium of film or television without music. Like, it underscores everything. Kind of like music is the soundtrack of our lives. It's the soundtrack of what that movie is trying to accomplish for you. And my choice this week, to me, is a perfect example of a scene that is made iconic because of the song, and how that song encompasses everything that we're watching as an audience in that moment. And it's absolutely crucial to the movie, and has become, I think, in my estimation, one of the most iconic movie scenes in history, because of this great marriage of movie and music.
So before you dive into the song, right, there are two filmmakers for me off the top of my head, and that's not to say that there isn't more than two, of three. I just thought of a third off the top of my head, that feel like they write or direct their movies with the music in mind of the scene. It's almost like they block the scenes out with the music in mind. Mm-hmm. And the first one that comes to mind is Martin Scorsese, right? And when you think about movies like Goodfellas, when you think about Scorsese's iconic films and the way the music interweaves with them, and Quentin Tarantino took inspiration from that very clearly with his filmmaking style, which wasn't even one of the three that I thought of. Then the third one I thought of, because the second one I thought of is your guy, right? But the third one I thought of is Edgar Wright. And mm-hmm. when you watch an Edgar Wright movie, it's almost like watching a musical, yeah. Right? The way the action, the way the scene plays out hits the rhythm and beats and tone of the song, right? Mm-hmm. And the second guy I thought of, right, is the guy that you picked, is Cameron Crowe. Mm-hmm. And Cameron Crowe's films, whether it's Jerry Maguire, like, just list off his movies. The music in the movie is so interwoven with the narrative, especially this particular scene that you pick out. And with that, why don't you talk a little bit about the movie and the scene you chose?
I would love to. I'm going to throw out one last filmmaker because you were talking about it. He jumped in my head immediately, and that's James Gunn. James Gunn writes his scripts to music and incorporates them into the screenplay. So I'm sure we're going to get to some Scorsese. Immediately, I thought of Color of Money and how well he used the music in that. And we're going to talk about Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino. But today we're talking Cameron Crowe. And we're talking one of my all-time favorite movies, Almost Famous, which I just revisited here again not that long ago. I just got the limited edition vinyl set. It's like six LPs that encompasses the entire movie soundtrack along with quotes from the movie and the scene I'm talking about. And as, if you've seen Almost Famous, you know which song I'm talking about. It's the Tiny Dancer scene. One of the most iconic scenes, I think, in film history right now. The movie itself wasn't a huge hit when it first came out. It's become kind of a cult classic after the fact, and I'm very thankful it is. If I were to give you a little context of what's happening in the movie up until this point, I actually got a little sound clip here for you. One of the characters played by Billy Crudup ends up dropping some acid at a party after a concert that ends up standing on a roof ready to jump into the pool. And he gives us these little pearls of wisdom.
I dig music.
All right, and then from there, he jumps into the pool. The tour bus swings around, picks him up, and the William Miller character, who's there to write an article on the band for Rolling Stone. The band is very kind of fractured at this point. Everybody has their own thing going on. Everything's very quiet. You know, the Billy Crudup character is coming off of his acid trip, and they're on the bus. They're all kind of miserable, and Tiny Dancer plays. And what happens next? Is complete movie magic. And John, I actually found a version of this song that actually has the cast singing along like they do in the movie. I'm really kind of hoping that I haven't heard it all the way through this version yet, but I hope the Kate Hudson line is there where William looks at her and says, I need to go home. And she says, you are home. It's one of my favorite moments in the film.
So what you're saying is, and this is, I'm with you 100% with how iconic this movie is. It's one of my personal favorite movies. I'm a big Cameron Crowe fan. I love that we're kicking off the show with this. I had picked a song, and we bumped my song to the second episode because you picked such an iconic movie and iconic song that means a lot to both of us. I'm very happy you found this version. And also, like, isn't it a little blasphemous to talk over Elton John? But yeah, sure, we're gonna talk about and discuss the version where the cast sings over iconic singer pianist Elton John.
Well, and interesting, Elton John actually credits this scene with positively changing the way he viewed himself as a songwriter, both past and present. So I think Elton John was okay with how the song was used in the movie and with the cast singing along with it. So what do you say, John? We'll break in every once in a while and talk about kind of what we're listening to, but let's give Tiny Dancer a spin from 2000's Almost Famous.
This is one of my brother's favorite songs to sing at karaoke, and it preempted, I think, this movie coming out. My brother once stole a man's cheetah design jacket and ran on stage and requested the song in the karaoke bar in the bowling alley. And like, he's not a singer at all, but the song, because the lyrics are so clear and crisp, it's infinitely singable, whether you can sing or not. Like, I'm lip syncing along with these lines one by one. Corey, what are your thoughts on that?
You're very right. And what I love about this song is that with Bernie Taupin wrote the lyrics to this, he was writing about California in the 70s. You know, he was trying to just capture the spirit of that time. And but in the movie, and for everybody else, it has a different context. You know, in the movie, it's very much it's just how people come together over a song, no matter how kind of fractured they are at that point in their lives, a song can bring them all together. You know, so I love how a song can take on different meanings. Like for your brother, I'm sure it had a different meaning, right? Singing out on karaoke. He probably wasn't caring too much about California in the 70s. It probably meant something else.
And as a kid, I remember I used to think that the song was about like the little ballerina in the music box.
Right.
So, I mean, to each his own.
Yeah, it's just because women in England were completely different than the women in California in the 1970s. He always talked about they wanted girls at that time were sewing patches on their jeans. And that's where the line Blue Jean Baby came from. So.
Ballerina, you must have seen her dancing in the sand. Now she's in me, always with me, tiny dancing in my hand.
John, have you seen Elton John in concert?
No, I'm going this summer. So I'm going in a couple of weeks to see him. I had passes to see him and Billy Joel maybe almost 2 decades ago now. And I had a final that got rescheduled the night of the concert. So it was pass my class or go see Elton John and Billy Joel together. Yeah. And I chose wrongly, I feel, in hindsight, because I've seen that, hence seen Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. But 20 years later, I've still never seen Elton John. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
I tell you, I saw him a couple of years ago. He played two nights in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and I got to see him on the first night. And this song, when it comes up in the set, is an absolute standout. And he still, to this day, you know, older gentleman can sing like you wouldn't believe and still play like you wouldn't believe. So that, I was so honored I got to hear that song live in concert. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts after you see him here on his Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour, because the man can still deliver. And this is an absolute, absolute classic.
Jesus freaks out in the street, handing tickets out for God.
All right, so there we have our first cast member jumping in. I remember, again, at this point in the movie, the lead guitar player, who's kind of the star of the band, storms off because he wants to be around real people. So he ends up going to a party in Topeka, Kansas. And William Miller, the young teenager from Rolling Stone, accompanies him. They finally got him out of the pool, and he's coming down, and they're on the bus, and everybody's just all kind of bitter. And you just got this one character who hasn't really said much in the movie up to this point, just starts singing along to this song on the radio. And that's really where the magic of the scene happens.
Well, I think it's one of the things I adore about this movie is William Miller is based on Cameron Crowe. Mm-hmm. And just seeing the band and everything through William's eyes, this is really the moment in the film, you know, like you alluded to the line, you are home, where William, you know, who's been an outsider to this point, really feels like, or it feels like the family finally accepts him, where he goes from here, and the fact that he kind of rejects that family in the long run is a very interesting journey for him. But it's like everything he ever wanted. This is almost like for like you Avengers fans, this is like when Tony Stark anoints Peter Parker, like you're an Avenger now, right? This is kind of that, but done with song and done with the singing along with the band and being part of this family that he's been traveling with all summer.
And kind of interesting that character that started singing here is the bass player for Stillwater. Larry Fellows, played by Mark Kozelek. Originally, that was supposed to be Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains playing that part.
Oh.
because he's really good friends with Cameron Crowe, and I thought that would have been pretty cool. Jerry Cantrell had a bit part in Jerry Maguire, if you remember. He was the guy who worked at the coffee shop when Jerry was printing out his manifest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. God, Bernie Taupin can paint a picture, can he? Like, it's some of the best writing you're going to find, not just in music, I think, period. Like, it's just so poetic. And Piano Man, he makes a stand in the auditorium, looking on, she sings the songs, the words she knows, the tune she hums. That's just perfection.
And the cast is in great harmony with Elton John here. And it's weird because it's like, I almost want to start singing along with them, but I don't want to ruin our show at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point I feel like you and I should just jump in and ruin the show.
We'll just pause the song. Oh, big clouds.
No, don't pause it. Just ruin the show, Corey. If we're going to do it, we're going all out. Do not pause if one of us starts singing.
You want us to ruin the show first on our first episode?
No, but I want us to sing along with it. I want us to feel like we're part of Stillwater, man.
I do. I already do feel like I'm part of Stillwater because I remember this scene, and I remember, you know, how everyone just kind of jumps in at certain times, and, you know, even Jeff Beebe and Billy Crudup, you know, when the chorus kicks in, they kind of forget all their tension. You know, they had that big fight before the show over the T-shirt, and Jeff Beebe came with that great line. And you know what? I'm going to say it. Your looks have become a problem. And it was kind of like, what?
I like how, and we haven't really discussed it yet, but Crudup, you know, is constantly referring to William as the enemy.
Yep.
Because he's the writer. And it's like, it's a weird moment where the enemy becomes like the little brother, right? Like, you know, all the girls, this is before all the girls have, or after all the girls have sex with him, right?
I think it's before.
It's before, right? I'm trying to remember where this falls. But this is like where William is kind of blurring the line between being a reporter and becoming part of the band and partying a little bit too much with the band, right? Like, he becomes the story to a degree.
Yeah, and he was warned by Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, don't be friends with the band. They're not your friends. They just want you to make them look cool in Rolling Stone. But yeah, there's that moment where and it happens on that line with Penny Lane. I need to get good. I need to go home. No, you are home. And that kind of became the moment that begins the kind of downward spiral for William later in the film.
I have to go home.
And there we are now. We've been talking about this line, and it comes at the crescendo of the song, right? Like Hold Me Close to Tiny Dancer, as they're all singing along with the chorus, you know, they break it up because it almost plays on our expectations, because we're all now at this point in the theater or at home singing along with them, because it's the part, no matter who you are, you know this part. Mm-hmm. And it plays on the expectations where they drop the dialogue in. And it's like, it's a great bit of filmmaking. It's a really smart bit of filmmaking not to do that over some of the other lyrics and to do it over the chorus.
Yeah. It's something I don't think Cameron Crowe gets enough credit for. He's obviously considered a very great writer. He wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High amongst other classics, but as a director, it's little things like that, like John just mentioned, that I think stand out for him, especially when it's a, you know, this was essentially his life story in a lot of ways. So He really directed this film incredibly well. He did win the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for this movie, but I think that was its only award, unfortunately, because it deserved lots more. All right, that's Elton John, Tiny Dancer, from Almost Famous, released September 22nd, 2000. Only made $47 million at the box office, but has become a cult classic. And you can find it on iTunes and streaming and all that stuff. If you're a fan of, gosh, movies at all, period, I think you're going to love Almost Famous. It has everything. And one of my favorites of all time.
I take exception to this phrase, cult classic, right? It's a movie that we didn't find in the movie theaters, you know, mainly because movie theater prices over the years have gone crazy, and justifying what it takes to go see a movie in a crowded theater on a big screen for years, for decades, has become a harder thing to justify. And the marketing comes into play, and there are a lot of things that come into play other than how good the movie is. You know, the birth of home video and DVDs and stuff have allowed us to rediscover or discover these movies that were missed in the box office. And now with streaming services, a lot of these things are going straight. Like nowadays, this would have gone straight to like one of the streaming services, and it wouldn't be a cult classic. It would just be something that was awesome we found on a streaming service.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely
and
right.
That's okay. It's a great movie. I feel like calling it a cult classic almost lowers it a little bit, and it's a classic movie. Like this is a movie, if you love film, you should own this movie, right? And I know, like, this is Corey's favorite movie. It's among my favorites, and that's not knocking it. I just have, you know, stronger taste than Corey.
See, and I consider it called classic kind of a badge of honor because of what it entails. Like, you know, Spinal Tap is considered one of the greatest cult classics of all time, and it's one of the best movies of all time. So I look on it a little more positively than you. Maybe I've just had a better childhood, John. I don't know, but you're an awful negative person there. But you can't be negative when it comes to Tiny Dancer and Elton John and this soundtrack, John. You remember some of the other tunes that were in this movie? We had some Zeppelin, we had some Skinner, we had the Allman Brothers.
They threw all kinds of money at all kinds of artists for anything that they could license to get in this film. And it makes sense because it's about that era of music, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about what it was like living in that era of music and following bands around and being part of that culture. And it's about the culture of music. This is a movie about the culture of music. And, you know, being that you've become kind of a cornerstone man around here on music podcast or podcasts that talk about music or whatever, choosing this song from this movie makes so much sense to kick off this show. Because I guess we should probably talk about what this show is. And this show is very simply, we haven't gamified anything. There's no, you know, wheels or dice or anything. Corey picks a song, I pick a song, a guest picks a song. That song has to be from a movie, TV show, or some kind of thing like that. It could be an animation, but however you classify this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it could have lyrics. It doesn't have to have lyrics. It needs to be a song. It could be part of the soundtrack. It could be a song that happens to be in the scene. And we discuss it in that context. And then we put it on our Spotify playlist that we have that's simply called Backtracks Theme Music. And you'll find that on Spotify, and it will be a continuously growing playlist to listen along to all the songs that we pick that inspire us from the movies that we love.
And I'm looking forward, John, to bringing on some guests and getting, you know, some of the songs that they love from the movies that they love. I think we can get a really eclectic mix like you and I, we already talked about it. When we're picking, it's going to be 80-90% 80s movies, because that's just what we grew up on. But I'm looking forward to getting maybe some younger people, maybe some older people on here. Just what are the songs that from the movies that they love? And I think we're going to get some really cool stuff.
I make no promises, Corey. I'm going to throw some weird shit on there.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
I will find stuff from the 1930s and be like, you know what? We're going this way today.
I don't doubt it. But before we do that, John, I was thinking maybe at the end of every show, maybe you should give us a little teaser trailer of what's coming up next week. You don't have to give it all away. Just maybe give us a little teaser of what your pick for episode two is going to be.
So one of the movies that really inspired me growing up was constantly played on HBO. And it's easily the first movie I've seen about female empowerment. And the song is about that. But the song is really... You could throw it up there with the Rocky soundtrack. You could throw it up there with the Best of the Best from Karate Kid. It's like one of those kind of power songs. And the artist is an artist that frequently finds her way on my playlist in my car. And there is what you call a tease, folks.
There's lots of little hints in there if you kind of look through them. I know it took me a while when John gave me worse hints. I eventually got it, but
I got the
movie anyway.
I told you an actor, and I told you it was this particular actor's first movie. So if anybody wants to just go look it up, I'm pretty sure it's his first movie. But Christian Slater is in this movie in a supporting role. And it's his first or one of his very first appearances in film. And it's a fantastic movie, but we'll talk about it more next week.
Awesome. I can't wait. And at the end of every show, John, I know when you and I do the Aerosmith show, we always give the last word to Steven Tyler. I thought for this show, we would maybe end on a famous movie clip. What do you think?
Look, you're the producer. I just show up. You don't even pay me. So it's really whatever you want to do.
Well, you know, I was thinking about paying you, but I'm not going to now. All right. So to end off this week, we're going back to Almost Famous and the wise words of Lester Bangs as played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. Good night, everybody.
Oh, man. You made friends with him. See, friendship is the booze they feed you. As they want you to get drunk and feeling like you belong.
Well, it was fun.
Because they make you feel cool. And hey, I met you. You are not cool.
I know. Even when I thought I was, I knew I wasn't.
Right, because we are uncool. Now, while women will always be a problem for guys like us, most of the great art in the world is about that very problem. Hey, good-looking people, they got no spine. Their art never lasts. Then they get the girls, but we're smarter.
Yeah, I can really see that now.
Yeah, because great art is about, you know, guilt and longing and... You know, love disguises sex, and sex disguises love.
Hey, let's face it. You got a big head start. I'm glad you were home.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
Me too.
You're doing great. Yeah. The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool.